growl.
Hello and welcome to another Cake Wolf's Happy Hour. This is the 31 days of Halloween where we are covering the show Monsters, horror anthology that ran from the late 80s to early 90s. Today we are covering episodes 1 and 2 from season 3. We have closed off season 2 and we are currently going through the last 24 episodes of this show. So, are you excited about this cake, bitch?
Sure.
Yeah, I am not too excited. I'm kind of sad to leave this behind. I want more episodes of Monsters. How about you?
I am going to be happy when we're through with them.
Yeah?
There weren't that many good ones for me to get too excited about this, show, but maybe season 3 will prove to be much more exhilarating.
Yeah, so hopefully at the beginning of the show, we had played a nice little quote from Mr. Arnold Schwarzenegger, one of his best roles as Dutch in the movie Predator. He says, stick around. So hopefully you guys will stick around beyond the 31 days of Halloween, where we have our regular show, Cake Wolf's Happy Hour, that runs weekly, and yeah, we just kind of do whatever we feel like. Sometimes we talk about toy lines, sometimes we'll talk about movies, sometimes we'll talk about our relationship issues, you know, whatever we want.
Sure.
Yeah, so kicking it off, our first episode is Stressed Environment. Cake Bitch is going to cover this one. I'm just going to run you through some of the peoples doing the things here. Our director is Jeffrey Wolf, and our writer is Neil Marshall Stevens, whom we have covered before. He is the writer for 13 Ghosts, Hellraiser Deader, etc. He's done some episodes of Monsters, including the very first episode, which was called The Fever Man back in 1988. And if you want to know a little bit of the history of the show Monsters, check out our October 1st episode on paddedroom.podbean.com, where we'll talk about that a little bit. And our actors are Carol Lindley as Dr. Elizabeth Porter, Victor Rader Wexler as Dr. Robert Winston, Scott Wire as Keith, and Kathleen McCall as Gina. This episode aired September 30th of 1990, and yeah, go right ahead, Cake Bitch. We'll let you kick this off.
All right, so Stressed Environment starts off in a science lab.
This is
a nerd guy. He's some sort of scientist watching his...
But are all scientists nerds?
Well,
this guy?
They make him look extra nerdy.
They do.
He has the dark rim glasses, and he's slobbering over his lady coworker who is changing outside a window to come on the job. She's decontaminating by stripping off her clothes and putting on a jumper.
Yeah, he is thinking about coming on the job.
Yeah, okay. So she walks into the lab all decontaminated, and she says, come and get it, boys, dinner time. And what she's doing there is she's checking to see if any of the rat traps have rats stuck in them, because they're doing an experiment with rats. All of the traps are sprung, but there's no bait inside them, and two of the traps have gone missing. And while she's under the cabinet, the lead scientist, what is her name? Dr. Elizabeth?
Yes.
Dr. Elizabeth asks her to check the pesticide nozzle because it's not working properly. She finds out that the pesticide nozzle is jammed. It's full of cardboard. And while she's in there, she's trying to figure out why this nozzle is jammed. She's trying to get it unjammed. What was the Dr. Robert calls? And asks to speak to Dr. Elizabeth. And he says that there's a problem with the data from her lab. And while this is happening, our lady scientist gets into some trouble in the laboratory. And she kind of, like, convulses a little bit and then goes limp, and the other gentleman, Keith, I believe is his name, runs in and pulls her out and finds out that she's been stabbed with spears made of glass pieces and wood. She was stabbed in the head with a spear, apparently also in the neck.
Yeah, and these spears are, like, makeshift. They're pretty much dulled after, like, chewed down rulers and pencils and that sort of thing.
Yeah, they're sharpened kind of like early caveman tools. So, Keith pulls her out from under the cabinet, and the only live rat that they actually have in their possession, he stomps on it and kills it. So this is when Dr. Robert comes down, and he is saying that, listen, your research has gone nowhere. I have to fire you, to Dr. Elizabeth. And she says, what are you talking about? You're my protege, and now you think you're big and important because you're in the head lead, blah, blah, blah. And that's when she confesses that her experiment was actually one where she wanted to create a new species by exposing these rats to stressed environments so that they would become more intelligent. And she says, look at the spears that they're making. They're making weapons. They have complex social societies. And this is amazing. And the rats, they're still alive. And this is when Keith raises the possibility that, hey, they've kind of been stealing silverware and stuff. They might not be in that room anymore. And then we hear scurrying in the walls.
Yeah.
And Dr. Elizabeth basically points out that these rats, all they know is violence and aggression. So that sets you up for good feelings.
Yeah. Creating their own environment and society with, a good old cornerstone of nothing but straight out aggression.
Just violence and aggression.
Sounds like lots of parts of America.
So now we know the rats are out of the room because the lights go out. Dr. Robert's still unconvinced that this is all the rats doing, but they open up the fuse box and they find two rats inside, two of these, like, reptilian-looking rats, and they quickly close the fuse box and wire it shut. And Dr. Elizabeth confesses that she chose rats for her laboratory experiments because she could kill a lot of them without rousing suspicion. But when Dr. Robert suggests that maybe we should kill all these mutant rats, she goes, no, you can't kill them all. They're intelligent beings. So, weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of par for the course with this show,
so,
you know.
So, instead, she suggests that if we've taught them aggression, we can teach them mercy.
If you've got a hard-thinking mind, you need to shut it off before you watch some of these.
Yeah, I think this might be the problem, because I'm like, this just doesn't make sense. So, a lot of these episodes just don't work for me.
Yeah, they're great to watch if you're doing something else. Not all of them, but some of them.
Anyways.
Fold some laundry while I'm watching Monsters.
So Robert's the head honcho. He says, no, we're going to go kill the rats. So he picks up the poison canister and tries to talk Keith into helping him, but Keith's like, no thanks, I don't want to get stabbed. And Keith stays behind in the observation room. And Dr. Robert goes in to try and kill the rats, but they attack him. They use catapults and
yeah, it's basically catapults, spears, crossbows, trebuchets, spears. They're making some pretty crafty things out of what they got. They're,
yeah,
like,
they
little
become medieval society.
Right. They're like baby MacGyver rats.
So Robert's dead. In the meantime, the rats inside the observation room get loose and manage to knock something over on top of Keith, and Keith is now dead too. And so Dr. Elizabeth walks into the observation room and goes, oh no, Keith, and she finds this rat, and she's like, I'm going to save you. And the rat responds, our turn, and she says, listen, we taught you violence and we taught you well, but I can kill too. And she threatens this rat with the canister of poison. So she thinks that she's winning them over because she's like, listen, I don't want to kill you. Let's try something new. But the rat gets spooked and calls on the attack, and they shoot her with their, old style tools.
Yeah, I don't know if the rat was actually spooked. I think the rat was just waiting for her to put her guard down and take her hand off of the valve from the poison canister.
That's possible.
I think once that happened, he was like, huh, you stupid cunt. And then he just, like, fucking gave the dead alarm.
Well, to me, it sounded more like a scared alert, but you might be right, because these rats are super duper intelligent, but either way.
Well, they're aggressive as fuck, so. Yeah.
Either way, she gets shot, and as she's dying, she tries to reach for the canister of poison, but she dies before she can open it, so the mutant rats, that's where the episode ends. So the mutant rats, I assume, are causing all the political turmoil.
Yeah, her last word is Rosebud.
Rosebud?
No, it's not.
Oh, I can't remember what her last word was.
It was meaningless. It was something like, you're so much like us.
Oh, so human, I think right. She said. So yeah. Human.
Rosebud.
Interchangeable.
So you did skip over one of the cool ways that the Dr. Robert is killed. We've got a trebuchet, basically, that launches this poison, like rat poison, right into his face. So he's choking on that while he's... He chokes on it, he falls to his knees, and, you know, he basically gets to the rat's height.
I didn't get that it was rat poison.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yep, good stuff. Liked it. That's our episode there. What did you think of these monsters? You mentioned that they were, like, a hybrid between rats and reptiles. I kind of saw that, too. They had a little bit of iguana features to them.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. I think they were just supposed to look mutant-y.
Right.
I almost think it would have been more convincing had they just looked like rats, but wearing, like... glass shards around their neck.
Sure. They were definitely stop animation rats. They had puppets for these things, and they did okay on them, I think.
Yeah, I thought the stop animation was kind of fun. Like, it's not going to win any awards for it.
Right. I'd give the monster itself a 2. I think they were okay.
Yeah, I'll give it a 2.5, because mutant rats are kind of frightening. I don't like regular rats.
Oh, I like rats. I used to have pet rats.
I think that's weird.
Yeah, they're smart. They're very nice.
And you can kill a lot of them without, arising any suspicion.
Apparently, yeah. Any
suspicion, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead and make an army of mutant rats. It's probably better than, training yetis to fuck each other or fucking them yourself. So,
right, yeah. There you go. Definitely better than that.
Mutant army rats. There you go. Better than yetis, I guess.
Just the sheer volume.
Sure, yeah.
It'd be overwhelming.
that's proven in the movie Willard. Got a guy that can psychically control rats. That was fun. So what would you say that you would change about this, if anything? Would it work as a movie?
I would change the acting.
Okay.
And I'm not sure that there is enough here to turn it into a movie.
No, I don't think so. It's too basic of a tale, and there's not enough creativity behind it. It's you know, killer rats, sure.
A Z at the end.
To change anything of it, I guess let's see that woman when she's doing her little striptease there to get into her work clothes. Let's see it all.
Ah, jeez.
Let's see that. That's what we can change from this.
You know, the thing that bothered me most about the acting is none of them were acting appropriately to the fact that a lab assistant just died.
Yeah.
Like, all of them are just like, oh, but look how cool these rats made tools. Like, no, that is not...
Why not?
I think you would be doing immediately after the death of your lab assistant.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. But, you know, whatever. It's the show Monsters. You're getting that sometimes. Now, in other media, I'm going to suggest The Secret of Nim, and this is based off of a book. This is a movie that is a cartoon for children, not necessarily horror. It does have some scary moments in it for kids. They did have some moments that scared me when I was younger. This is a 1982 film about a rat, it's actually a mouse by the name of Miss Frisbee, who has a very sick son, and she needs to get him medicine. What makes it even more stressful is it's soon going to be moving day. all of the animals, including this family of mice, they live in the back of a farmer's house in the lawn, and the lawnmower is going to get fixed in like a few days, and moving day happens when the farmer mows the lawn, because it can, you know, kill a lot of the animals that are living underground and whatnot. So in order to move her son, she's got to get some medicine for him. And in order to do that, she's got to go on a quest. And she has to go and ask a scary old wise owl and see where, like, she's going to have
to... owls eat mice.
Yeah, that makes it even more scary. This owl is creepy when they show him. He's, like, been asleep for, like, hundreds of years is what it seems like. He's got these spiders crawling all over him and spider webs everywhere. Yeah, it's a good movie, and what's cool about it is the, Nim is like, it's been years since I've seen this, but I think Nim was like a laboratory, like an experiment name for, these lab rats that were, being experimented on in a laboratory by these scientists that were trying to make them more intelligent. They did end up, doing it to a bunch of rats. And some of them went completely fucking evil, and that plays into some of the part in the story itself. So, yeah, we've got these guys in this cartoon making some smart rats.
Is NIM short for National Institute of Mental Health?
No.
It's in all caps, so I wasn't
maybe
sure.
Maybe it is. Maybe it is. I haven't seen the movie for so long, but yeah, maybe they were experimenting on rats to try and like fix Alzheimer's or some shit. Who knows? That makes sense. Moving on to the episode rating here for this rat episode.
I would probably give it a 2.
Yeah?
Yeah. It just wasn't... The acting was so bad that it took me out of it, and it wasn't that compelling of a story. It's by far not the worst episode I've watched, but meh.
Okay, I'm gonna give it, I guess, a 2. It's fine. It's not the worst thing out there, but, you know, the rats look cool enough, and they've got some pretty spiffy weapons and ways of attacking the people that's good enough to have a watch. Stressed environment, definitely the name of that rings home to basically say all you need to know about my childhood. Gonna say that the lesson here is what? To not make super intelligent rats?
No, if you're gonna make super intelligent rats, like, I don't understand why there couldn't have been a lesson of compassion all along. Like, why would you purposely make these rats know nothing but violence and aggression?
Yeah. I think that animal experimentation is pretty shit. I think we can do fine without it. And the reason why it keeps going, like, and happening over and over again, these, like, tons of makeup companies especially are horrible with it, is just to, like... make their numbers at the end of the, you know, the fiscal year or whatever. Like,
he knows about this makeup stuff because I've been testing a bunch of lip colors out for my own personal blog, and yeah, I've been telling him how most drugstore companies still test on animals. They claim that they don't want to, but because regulations are different in different countries, they can't guarantee that an animal has never been tested with their product.
Yeah, I've known about this for a long time, with, like, especially, like, what they do with seals. I watched a documentary on how disgusting it is what they do with seals, and, like, killing them.
Well, I guess I should have said why it's in the forefront of your mind.
Right. But, yeah, the whole seal thing is really nasty. There's, like, this time of year where people go out there and just club the fuck out of seals all day.
And that's,
yeah,
for makeup testing?
Well, parts of...
Or is that just animal cruelty?
No. Parts of their body goes towards makeup, like the blubber, stuff like that.
Oh, to make the product.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah. So, I mean, just like...
I hope I don't,
like,
have anything with seal
animal
blubber.
Experimentation, animal cruelty, just... All for what? So you can have some colorful lipstick or whatever? Like,
well,
fuck
I don't
you.
Think I hope there's not any blubber in my lip products.
Yeah.
It's all very chemical sounding, so I don't think that there is.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's all disturbing. When you dig down deep into pretty much anything, it's quite a disturbing place that we're sitting our butts in. But moving to the next on episode, we've got episode 2 from season 3. This one aired October 7th of 1990. It's called Murray's Monster. So Murray's Monster is directed by Scott Alexander. Its writer is also Scott Alexander, and you'll know Scott Alexander as the writer behind 1408, the Stephen King.
He's pretty twisted.
Yep, he's a cool guy. I'm pretty sure he was on the Horror Movie Podcast talking about some of the things that he's written before. Moving on to our actors, we've got Joe Flattery as Sherwin, Miriam Flynn as Luann, Teresa Genzel as Debbie, Marvin Kaplan as Murray Van Pelt, and Colin Penman as Murray's Monster. So, Sherwin is our psychiatrist, and he's a pretty shit psychiatrist.
He's awful.
He's running a practice like it's a complete joke, and they're playing this episode off as if it's a complete joke, because none of the ways that he is portraying his finesse in psychiatry comes across as anything other than a complete sham. He's basically there to hit on his secretary named Debbie and try to get her to run away with him to Paris, gay Paris, and do all of the sexy times with her. He's constantly sniffing her hair, giving her roses and gifts, and telling her that he's going to run away with her. She is kind of skeeved out by this, but sort of plays around with it.
I think she needs her job.
She is constantly saying, "What about your wife?" And he takes this in a completely different way, whereas I think she's trying to say, "Hey, you got a wife. Cool
and
your
I'm
jets,
not
buddy."
Interested.
But I think he's taking it as long as you're with her, this isn't going to happen, so you're going to have to get rid of her. Which is pretty much on the forefront of his mind throughout the entire episode. So when he gets visited by Murray Van Pelt, which is a little shrimp of a dude who is stocky and wears Coke bottle glasses.
He's super cute.
Yeah, real, like, real derpy looking kind of dude. He comes in and he says, "Doc, I got issues. I have authority issues." And Sherwin says to him, "Murray, sit the fuck down." So Murray sits down. And then he says, "Murray, you don't have to sit down if you don't want to." And then Murray gets back up. And then he laughs at Murray and says, "Wow, you are really messed up." And Murray says, "Yeah, I know. I need help, Doc." And So Sherwin
actually says you need professional help.
Yeah.
And like, why else do you think you're there?
So Sherwin basically has him sit down on the chair again. He hypnotizes Murray, and he does this by saying, he like takes his watch and he swishes it around and just haphazardly and goes,
12, 11.
Yeah.
10.
No, not even like that. He's like 12, 62, 12 again, and 3. You're hypnotized. Like, just like that. Like, it's fucking weird.
Yeah.
And
this episode is pretty bizarre.
And so, yeah, Murray is hypnotized. He's not looking at Sherwin like, "Dude, what the fuck? I need to actually take your advice and get professional help. You are a fucking quack." And, no, but he is actually hypnotized. And he starts talking about how he is, he's afflicted by the sickness that everyone else is, and he starts listing off these, like, basically DSM terminologies that self-diagnose.
Super technical.
Right. It's all self-diagnosing, and it's what a psychiatrist would actually be saying in his notes about this dude. Murray's just doing all the work for Sherwin, and Sherwin lets him rattle on as he leaves Murray there sitting on his lounge couch. And what are those things called? Chaise lounge?
Oh, I was going to say a fainting couch.
I think they're called Chaise lounge or something. Anyway, he leaves Murray there, and he goes back out to Debbie to hit on her some more. And then he goes back to Murray, and he basically says, "All right, Murray, that's enough. So let's see your regression. Show it to me." And Murray, in a very weird transition, his skin pops open. And we've got this strange looking creature come out that is, it looks like a demon mixed with an ape.
I wrote down ape man. I think okay. It just looks like an ape man.
Yeah, it kind of looks like King Kong if you gave King Kong really sharp teeth, tiny horns, and some horns? Black eyes. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice the horns.
Yeah, okay. And claws. So yeah, he's kind of
And he's much smaller than King Kong.
Yeah.
They say he's an 8 foot ape. But yeah. He doesn't look like he's 8 feet tall.
But he starts coming after Sherwin, like he's gonna kill Sherwin. And Sherwin says, "Oh, well, fuck this! Wake up!" And so Murray,
instantly.
Yeah, Murray instantly wakes up. We got a very quick transition there, and then we go away from. There's these parts of the show where it like would have a commercial, and we've got that moment. So we have that like weird transition when it comes back to the show. We've got Sherwin sitting down with his wife, Luann, and they're eating together. And Sherwin is ready for some food. He's hungry. And his wife, Luann, puts down Farfels, which I think you said are bow tie pasta?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking of something different. But
it
I
didn't look
it
like
bow tie
pasta.
Pasta.
Yeah,
you're right.
It looked like orzo.
Yeah.
Like... Maybe? Or couscous?
Yeah. I have no idea, but
it's some kind of grain or sparkle. Something.
It's supposed to be clean eating.
Right. And she learned this from her, what? Yoga
instructor?
Yeah. Is that what you take yoga? Does that come across from your yoga instructors?
No.
See,
I mean, most...
She tell you to eat Farfel and nothing
most
else?
Most yoga instructors don't really offer guidance unless you're asking to be guided on, like, the... What is it? Ayurvedic medicine? One of the yogic principles is non-harm. So technically, if you're doing yoga, like, full force, you're not eating meat. And, yeah. So
when I think of yoga, I think of Dalzim from Street Fighter 2. Yoga flame. Yoga fire.
Flame.
Yoga. Yeah.
I mean, that's usually what I'm thinking when I'm in goddess pose. Like, everything is on fire.
He's a dude from India. He's a fighter that has these, like, really stretchy arms and legs and can shoot fire out of his mouth. He can teleport around and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And before his attacks, he says yoga.
Because it's racist?
How is that racist?
He's Indian.
So?
And the only thing they apparently do is yoga, apparently.
You need to chill out with you thinking everything is racist. Jesus. It's too much.
I mean, I guess it could have been worse.
Do you like...
Had, like, 8 arms.
Do you, like, eat chocolate cake and think, oh, man, this is, like, I'm gonna need a glass of milk with this to balance it out?
No, because that would be racist.
Oh, would it?
I need some white with my black.
I was just saying that, you know, you're gonna need some milk with your cake. You took it to a whole different level, so therefore
you
do have racism on the mind, my dear.
You were just implying that when you eat chocolate cake, do you need to have milk?
I think you took it to a whole different level. I am just talking about chocolate cake and
no, you
some
were talking
milk.
About an Indian fighter who yells yoga flame.
Yeah, and it's like an innocent 90s fighting game for the Super Nintendo and arcade.
Okay.
And you took it to this weird level. You made things weird. Everybody feels weird right now. Thanks to you.
I think you feel weird.
No, you made the listeners feel weird.
No,
now
like,
you should apologize.
Weird?
You should apologize.
I'm not gonna
and then
apologize.
We can move on.
Just move on.
All right. Didn't when you
where were we even now?
When you took yoga,
when you took yoga,
you had said that you know they're not giving you advice unless you ask for it. You had told me a story about a time where you did ask for advice. You wanted peen, and they supplied you with peen. So is this like a practice of yoga as well, where they give you penis?
No, I didn't ask anyone for the peen. It just so happened that I met the peen at a yoga event.
Oh, I thought...
That also involved beer.
Oh, I thought the peen was given to you.
No.
Like, you were like, hey, I need some peen, and your instructor was
oh,
like... Oh,
that
I got...
one! Yes,
okay.
That was. She regifted
bit of a
her.
Slut, cake bitches.
Yoga is a great place okay. to pick up some men.
Okay, well, let's tell
but
the listeners.
Actually kind of an asswipe.
Let's tell the listeners about this so they know how to get some peen if they need it.
Well, I mean, if you're a dude...
just be general.
I don't know. This was a weird thing where my yoga instructor was polyamorous, and so she had a extracurricular, and she basically said, oh, I think you might actually like him if you're just looking for some fun, sexy times. And so she gave him my information, and yeah, so I had a little fling, and he had a secret girlfriend, it turns out, and I felt like a disgusting other woman, and so I hate him.
Yeah, and you had also said that he had a gigantic penis.
Yeah, he did have a pretty large penis. I have actually met larger.
I'm drinking a 20-ounce Coke bottle. Was it like that?
No, it was not that girthy.
Okay.
It might have been that long.
Yeah. All right.
I was delighted when I met you and you had a normal size penis.
Well, you had said that they just kept getting bigger and bigger.
Yes. Well, the one after him wasn't longer, but it was fatter and very uncomfortable.
Well, I'll say that before we had sexy times and you had told me this story of how they kept getting bigger and bigger, I was thinking, oh man, I hope it's not like throwing a hot dog down an empty hallway.
Nope.
But, nope, it felt good.
Nope, my vagina just bounces right back.
Elasticity.
I haven't had children, so it's still...
You know, I hear that vaginas inspired the Stretch Armstrong figurines from the 90s.
How?
let's move on with this episode.
Who was stretching the labias?
Let's move on with this episode and let the listeners take from this that Cake Wolf has an average penis.
Totally normal size. It's delightful.
They're sitting down and they're eating Farfel, and he is pissed off because this is the 23rd day that he has had Farfel. 23 days in a row of Farfel. I think 23 days in a row of anything, I'm going to be tired of it.
I know. I mean, we eat that Purdue chicken stuff every week, and I'm surprised that we're not sick of it yet.
Yeah. But there's days in between
where
we have other things.
It, yes.
Like today we mixed it up and had sushi.
Yes.
So,
we
yeah.
did not make that ourselves.
Right. We're not that fancy, folks.
No, we went out into the world and got ourselves some sushi.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
Exciting.
Got me out of the house. So he's tired of Farfel. She's not. She wants to have all this clean eating, and they're talking about things that he doesn't give a fuck about. And so he starts imagining his boy Murray turning into a monster and strangling his wife to death. This gives him an idea to get Murray to turn into a monster and strangle his wife to death. So a pretty creative dude we got there. Mr. Sherwin goes back to his office next day. He tells Debbie to get Murray in here ASAP. Murray basically gets invited to Sherwin's house for dinner.
Yeah.
And so we transition to that. And
I feel like it's important that he hypnotized Murray again and said the keyword is Farfel.
Sure, he basically hypnotizes Murray, gets him to go into the monster form, and this time he stays hypnotized in the monster form, so that's convenient. A little bit inconsistent, but whatever. He gets him to accept the fact that once he hears the word Farfel, he's going to take the person who says it far away and do with them whatever he wants. All right, so at the dinner table, we've got Murray chowing down on some salad and having a good time. His wife, Sherwin's wife, Luann, brings out the main course, and Sherwin's all excited because he knows it's Farfel. He's going to get her to say Farfel, and then he's going to have exactly what he wants. She opens the dish, it's steak. And this goes back to something that he had said prior to him imagining her dying. He wants steak. He doesn't want Farfel. He wants some fucking steak. And if he gets some steak, he'll be happy, but he's tired of the fucking Farfel. And so his wife's trying to make him happy, doesn't make him happy, because he wants his wife dead. He needs her to say Farfel. So he goes through this rigmarole of having her, you know, trying to get her to say it. So he's like, why didn't you make what we usually have? What do we usually have? Just say what we usually eat. And eventually, she does say Farfel. So then Murray turns into a monster. He takes her, and he carries her outside of the house. Something I want to make note of, too, that I glazed over, which I thought was pretty interesting at the dinner table, is while they are eating, the wife says to Murray, please chew your food and swallow it before talking. It helps you digest it better.
Yeah.
Please use a coaster. This tablecloth is from India.
No. She says it's made by 100-year-old Incans.
Okay. All right. And so she goes to get the main course at that point, and that's when Murray turns to Sherwin and says, wow, you've really got a wild one. And he says it with enthusiasm, like he means it. Yeah.
He thinks she is wild.
All right. We transition to the next day. Sherwin goes to the office, and he is super excited. He gives Debbie a bouquet of flowers. Inside of the flowers, there is some plane tickets to Gay Paris. And he's telling her that he's going to sweep her off her feet and fuck her brains out. And he goes into his office, happy as a pig in shit, finds that his office is torn to shreds. He's all pissed off. He starts saying, God damn it, Murray, I told you to take her far away, not to my office. He sees his wife's scarf poking out from beneath the closet door, and he thinks she's dead behind there, so he starts getting worried. And he starts saying out loud how, you know, he didn't want Murray to do this, blah, blah, blah. Murray comes in, and he's freaking out at Murray. He opens the closet door, finds out that his wife's not in there, has Murray start recounting what went on the night before, and Murray's saying that he can't remember everything, just little bits and pieces. It's coming to him in, like, strange flashback moments. And we find out that Murray remembers killing the wife, chopping her up into a bunch of little pieces, and spreading her body parts all throughout the land. Sherwin seems a little bit happy about this. Murray seems a little bit, I don't know, dead inside throughout the entire episode to a degree. He's just this, like, cute little chubby dude. Anyway, the wife shows up, which makes Sherwin do a double take. He doesn't know what's going on at this point. And then Murray is like, hey, the wife's not actually dead. So when you had told me, or Sherwin tells Murray that I thought you were supposed to kill her. What the hell? Why didn't you kill her? And Murray reminds him that when he was hypnotized, the doctor told him to take her far away and do with her whatever he wanted. Well, what he wanted to do with her was to fuck her. And he says, luckily enough, Luann, your wife, wanted me to fuck her too.
Yes, and I would like to just thank them for putting consent in here. Right. Kudos, monsters.
Right. So apparently Luann is into giant demonic ape men. So good for her. You know, every sword has its sheath, right?
Yeah. I've said that before. Of all the problematic things in monsters, I was like, I'm going to give them cookies for this one.
Yeah. Sherwin seems genuinely upset about losing his wife to this schlub, but at least he's a little bit happy that he's got Debbie to take to Paris. He goes out to Debbie. Debbie says, dude, I'm not actually going anywhere with you because I play around with you at the office, but I have a boyfriend that fucks me, and you're not going to fuck me. So he seems upset now, super upset, hands the plane tickets to Murray and his wife Luann, tells them to have a good time, and Murray just smiles about it, and he's like, wow, thanks, Doc, this is great. I guess I'm graduating from therapy. And Sherwin's like, yeah, sure, whatever. Enjoy the Farfel. And then Murray turns into a monster. He breaks through the wall. He comes after Sherwin, and Sherwin's like, wait, remember, you can only do what you want to do. And
strangles him.
Yeah, and Murray's like, well, I am doing what I want to do. I'm strangling you, so die. And that's where our episode ends.
We don't actually get to see him die.
Right, yeah. What did you think of the monster for this one?
I liked the monster.
Yeah, he looked cool.
He was pretty basic, but...
He was goofy.
Yeah. It's pretty basic, but I thought they did it pretty well.
Uh-huh.
It was more convincing. I mean, it was a guy in an ape suit.
Right. I'd give it a 2 as well. I think it was fine.
I didn't actually give it a rating.
Okay.
I'm still just talking about it. I would give it a 3.
Sure. Is there anything that you would change about this episode? Do you think it would work as a movie?
I don't know that you could expand it to a movie, but I actually thought this episode was pretty okay.
I don't think it could work as a movie either. I don't think there's too much wrong about this because they're hamming it up throughout the whole episode. It's so obvious that they're not taking it seriously.
It was on purpose, and they felt like it was on purpose.
So, I don't think there is too much to change. Other than, I guess maybe, no, I think it's fine. Yeah, I liked it. I'm going to give the episode itself a 3.5 and say it's worth watching if you want something goofy. I think it was a good one.
Yeah, 3.5 sounds about right.
I think if you want something else that's kind of got a look of a demon slash ape thing, you can get a shaved ape looking demon motherfucker in a movie called Cellar Dweller from 1988. And its tagline is, "It will eat you out of the house." This one has a pretty interesting story to it. This is one that I watched as a kid and couldn't remember what it was for years until Shout Factory released it on DVD in a like a dual movie pack with the Dungeon Master. So this one is about a cartoon artist whose creations come alive because he's basically drawing his cartoons inside of a Necronomicon-looking thing. And all of the people that live in this apartment complex are basically being tormented by this creature that's coming out of the pages of a horror comic book that was famous back in the day. So it's got a really cool vibe to it. It's hammy at times, but there's some interesting gore scenes. It's got a cool scene where the demon ape looking thing chows down on an eyeball.
Ew.
So that's fun. And, it does have Jeffrey Combs in it. So you'll enjoy that if you like Jeffrey Combs. Don Mancini is the writer for this one. You're familiar with Don Mancini, right?
Oh, yeah, the Chucky guy.
Yep. He is the Chucky boy. We did do a Chucky-themed cocktail on cakewolf.com. You can check that out. It's a pretty tasty one. It's made with yogurt, of all things. Gives it that kind of consistency from the second Chucky movie when he's melted down. It's tasty. Yep, it's tasty stuffs. So, would you say there's a lesson to this episode?
You shouldn't plot to kill your wife.
No.
So, I'm just gonna say that.
I'd say if you're gonna give someone a keyword to kill someone else, don't say it yourself when you're around them. That's just stupid.
I guess also, like, if you're gonna be a therapist, don't be a shit therapist.
Yeah, take people's problems seriously.
I don't know that he had many clients.
No. And, don't hit on the secretary. Like, don't hit on anybody you're working with. Like, that's just bad news bears.
Yeah, don't dip your pen in the company ink.
Yep.
It's asking for trouble.
Yep. Not funds. I guess we're gonna close this one out. Is there any last words that you have?
I don't think so. Because I don't think I wrote down any notes in my margins this time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess we'll just close it out then and join us for tomorrow for some more episodes of Monsters. And also thank you, Mr. Darian, Mr. Buddy, and Miss Monica from the Padded Room, Padded Room Podcast, paddedroom.podbean.com, for letting us do this 31 Days of Halloween on your feed. Very much appreciated. You guys are wonderful people. We're closing out with the intro to the show Monsters. Have a great night. Thank you.
the hour. There must be something on. Oh, wow! Candy critters!
Oh!
Oh, great! It's Monsters, our favorite show. Shh, it's starting.
We need to come up with a better way to end our show. It's just saying, like, well, right. Join us next time. See ya. Bye-bye. Like, I don't know. Join us next time for Cake Wolf 2, The Revenge. And then each time we're done, we say Cake Wolf 3, The Revenge of the Revenge.
Oh, my God. But then we'd be up to, like, Cake Wolf 752 of The Revenge of the Revenge of the Revenge.
I guess.